Hello and welcome to another edition of Great Lives, in which we invite a well-known living person to pick a celebrated dead individual and tell us in what ways they feel inspired by them or possibly sickened by them. They don't have to actually like the person they've chosen, only to be fascinated. And actually, this week's chooser has inspired quite a lot of flack over the years herself, though she also has lots of admirers. She's been well-known as a broadcaster and journalist since the 1970s, and her style on screen and in print certainly is not genteel. As she once put it herself in an article detailing her rather checkered tenure as editor of The Independent on Sunday, I accept that I'm loud, larger than life, and common. Janet Street Porter, welcome to Great Lives. And your choice of a great life is, to my judgment, the most controversial we've had so far in this programme. Who is it?
It's the Marquis de Sade.
Ooh, and why?
Well, I grew up discovering the Marquis de Sade when I worked in the library in Fulham in West London as a teenager. And the more I read about the Marquis de Sade, the more I wish he was alive today and that I could know him and meet him. I'm not too interested in his sexual cataloguing of all kinds of excess. That's not what interests me about him. I think he's kind of inspirational. If he was alive today, he would be friends with Francis Bacon. Well, you know, when Francis Bacon was alive, I imagine they would have been close friends. I imagine that he'd know someone, a writer like Peter Ackroyd. He would have felt at home with Damien Hirst or with Jake and Dinos Chapman, the British artist. So I think he's a very contemporary figure, and he's someone who still has this power after all these years to shock people.
Let me quote the dictionary entry for him. Here we go. Donatien Alphonse François, Comte de Sade, born in 1740, died in 1814. His career as a cavalry officer was interrupted by periods of imprisonment for cruelty and debauchery. While in prison, he wrote a number of sexually explicit works, including The 120 Days of Sodom and Justine. Well, thank you, dictionary, but there's obviously a lot more to it than that. And with us is one of the experts on the Marquis de Sade. She's translated him. She's written a biography of his wife, Margaret Crossland. Margaret, what attracted you to a man who seems to have been the most sexually perverted person in history?
It sounds as though I have strange tastes, doesn't it? I had come across him first through Apollinaire, a great literary hero of mine, and the Surrealists all loved him, and I loved the Surrealists, so that's how we got going on that. I loved the 18th century because there was so much new stuff going on, but there was great ferment of ideas, and I think a lot of people realised that this rotten old monarchy couldn't go on much longer.
We're talking about France rather than England.
We are talking about France.
Well, now, these days, we usually try to explain deviant behaviour by looking at an individual's childhood. Is there, Margaret, anything in the Marquis de Sade's early years that throws light on his sexual drives?
Yes, I think there is. You see, he was a very lonely child because he had an elder sister who died very quickly, a younger sister who also died. His mother was a grand lady, a lady in waiting to one of the duchesses. She was always away. Father, when he'd finished being a general, I think, in the army, became a diplomat, and he was away too.
He was also bisexual, the father, wasn't he?
Well, they say that, yes, but a lot of people were in the 18th century. But they decided what could they do with this little boy. In the 18th century, people didn't love children very much. They were all given to other people to look after. And the little sad boy went off to his uncle, who was a cardinal. The cardinal was very badly behaved, I think worse behaved than his brother, and was once arrested in a brothel, which isn't really a good mark for a cardinal.
No, we're getting to the roots of it all. Janet, do you think it's a help to look at the Marquis de Sade's early years like this to understand the man he became?
I think so, because I think he was a child who grew up forming his own ideas, and even by the time that he was 10, it was noted that he had a very, very bad temper and uncontrollable rages, I think all hallmarks of a genius. I mean, he obviously had started to live in his own mind, and his education seemed to be over pretty quickly. I mean, by the time he was 14, he was sent off to the army.
Do you think it was possibly boredom that drove him to the sexual experiments he soon went in for? I mean, he once said, happiness lies only in that which excites, and the only thing that excites is crime.
Oh, I think he said a lot of things for effect, but I think that if you analyse what the Marquis de Sade actually did, I think he was a true artist. I can see why the Surrealists liked him, because when you look at the way he wrote repetitively about sex, he's writing it for a total effect, not for each thing to be analysed individually. And I think he was a great experimenter. And he, I mean, I think it's also really important to place what he, how he behaved in the context of the period. And I'm sure that Margaret will agree that at the start, he was certainly no worse than anyone in either his immediate circle or in the French aristocracy of the time.
I think we have to tackle also at this point, at the very beginning of the programme, the big moral question. You know, we can all have fun talking about the Marquis de Sade, but this is a man whose writings were on the bookshelf of, say, Ian Brady, the Moore's murderer. What do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's unfair to single out one author and to say that because somebody is a murderer and read their book, that it somehow implies that the author is morally responsible.
But isn't there a lot of choice in sadistic authors? There's de Sade and de Sade and de Sade from that era, surely.
The thing about Brady is that Brady and Myra Hindley would have done these horrible things anyway. I really cannot believe that anybody reads a few lines of an 18th century writer and starts killing children.
Well,
I don't believe it.
It's very grotesque and gruesome stuff. We'll come back to that. Let's move on now. He believed that the real appeal of sex, he said, lies not as an expression of love, but in its nastiness. He wrote, horror, nastiness and the frightful are what give pleasure when one fornicates. Is that your experience, Janet?
It's not my personal experience, but I think, again, you're reading him too literally. If you add up the 120 days of Sodom and you look at everything that he's writing about, it's almost like a mathematical equation. And if you look at the way that he describes sex in terms of pure mathematics or harmonics, he's exploring.
Both add spice to being a sinner. And this is a passage from his novel Justine, in which the heroine is begging for mercy at the feet of the dreadful Bressac.
She did not know the monster with whom she was dealing. She did not know to what an extent the passions bolster and fortify crime in such a soul as Bressac's. She did not know that all the promptings of virtue and sensibility in such circumstances were like so many needles in the scoundrel's heart, whose sharp pricks invested the projected atrocity with even greater violence. The true libertine loves even the dishonour, the scars, the censures that are the deserts of his execrable action. They are delights to his perverse soul. Have we not seen the man who loves even the tortures that human vengeance prepares for him, who undergoes them joyfully, who regards the scaffold as a throne of glory, on which he would be most grieved not to perish with the same courage that had animated him in the loathsome exercise of his sins and outrages? There you see a man in the last degree of considered corruption. There you see Bressac.
Well, our word for somebody like Bressac is, of course, sadist. Janet Street Porter, is it fair that the Marquis de Sade should have given his own name to sadism?
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that, but by the standards of the day, if you're going to define sadism as, you know, cruelty in the sexual act and pleasure derived from cruelty, it was widespread both in France and in England before it was actually called sadism. In 18th century France, the king's brother and a huge number of the aristocracy were indulging in sadism as part of their normal sexual behaviour. And in England, we had Sir Francis Dashwood and the Hellfire Club, so we can hardly claim to be clean hands. I think sadism was something that went on before de Sade arrived, but by writing about it in such an explicit way, he drew attention to it, and, you know, I can fully accept that kind of behaviour.
He must have had some very attractive characteristics, don't you think, because lots of women fell literally at his feet, didn't they?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, when you read descriptions of what he physically looked like, he was unremarkable. He had a pockmarked face, and there's nothing to suggest that he had any physical attributes that would make him kind of matinee idol material. Mm. I mean, he's like Casanova. I mean, again, we don't really know what Casanova looked like, but he was, again, allegedly not amazingly attractive. But de Sade, obviously, because he was so single-minded, because he was so totally focused on what he was interested in, possessed some quality that drew women to him throughout his entire life. Even when he ended his life in the mental hospital, he had a laundry maid who he'd kind of picked on from the age of 12 and groomed to be his mistress. So even in his 70s, women found him attractive. And it is important to say that a lot of women willingly went along with what he asked them to do, including his own wife.
That's a very good interpretation, because people forget this. He had piercing eyes, I gather. And I think there must have been an air of great concentration about him that really got people. And, of course, he liked actresses. And I think that he was an actor himself in some ways. He was acting the part of the Marquis de Sade, although he didn't know it at the time.
He certainly did some things we'd still be horrified by today, in a society that's supposedly completely liberated as far as sex is concerned. Here's a clip about this from the film Quills, which was released, I think, about a couple of years ago. And this is Michael Caine as a doctor.
I understand he practices the very crimes he preaches in his fiction.
Certainly not here. There were a few indiscretions in his youth.
Indiscretions? Abbe, please. I have read his case history. At 16, he violated a serving girl with a crucifix. After 6 months in a dungeon in Vincennes, he mutilated a prostitute, carving her flesh with a razor and cauterizing the wounds with hot wax.
Well, I've been dipping also into de Sade's famous book, The 120 Days of Sodom, and I thought I had a strong stomach, but Janet Street Porter, some of it really does make one recoil in horror, doesn't it?
Yes, but there was a documentary on television only last year about prostitutes in New York and what men pay them to do to them. And in, you know, sophisticated society all around the world, people are paying a great deal of money to have it done to them. So, again, I don't find it particularly shocking. I do believe, though, that in what he wrote there is a high level of fantasy, but I don't disagree that he derived a great deal of pleasure from extremely perverted sexual activity.
Whether or not it was just in the head, yeah. But, I mean, there is a difference between consensual sex of the kind you've described and fantasies in The 120 Days of Sodom, which include starving women to death as a stimulant to one's own sexual appetite, killing a prostitute by twisting her head almost half off.
But you don't really...
Making women having sex with animals, this sort of thing.
But, again, do you really believe that? Isn't he just setting it out for you to consider?
I don't know.
Well, that's the dilemma, isn't it? I mean, I think when you look at a lot of the paintings from someone like Hieronymus Bosch right through to the Surrealists, you see things in paintings that are surreal and disgusting, whether they're placed there as something the artist would like to do himself or herself is another matter, or whether they're placed in front of you for you to consider your own attitude to sexuality. And that's what's so good about the Marquis de Sade, and that's why he so intimidates people today, because he makes you confront your own attitude to sexuality. And by writing about sex in a non-emotional way, and I think it's really important to stress that, it is all laid out in a very flat, and I'm sure Margaret will agree that the writing in his books is very dry.
Clinical.
Like a shopping list, almost.
Margaret?
People say, I think Geoffrey Gora was the first to say, that it was rather like Kraft ebbing in advance.
Yeah.
Sade had to use all the physical side, because he didn't know much about the setup of the mind. So he had to try to explain strange mental processes by physical means.
Well, here he is again, talking about torturing women in his novel Justine.
The pleasure of killing a woman soon passes. After she is dead, she no longer feels anything. The delights of making her suffer disappear with her life. There remains only the memory. Let us do better, Rombo continued, putting an iron in the fire. Let us punish her 1,000 times more than if we were robbing her of her life.
I think we still need to keep on tackling this question, Margaret Crossland, of what he actually did as opposed to what he fantasised about in print. Do you think he did do awful things?
Oh, no, he did very, very little of this. Very little.
Well, torturing one woman would be more than enough for most people's moral sense, surely.
Well, the fact that he chose Easter Sunday to have one of his first nasty sexual goings-on is not a good thing. He was an atheist, as you know, and I think he chose that Sunday because he was demonstrating his objection to all this talk about God, religion, how to behave and all the rest of it. He was going to do what he wanted to do.
By the standards of the day, he was punished more for his attitude to religion than his attitude to sex. And as Margaret said, he was an atheist, and he didn't just keep that fact to himself. He encouraged women to masturbate with crucifixes, and that's why he was sent to jail. He wasn't necessarily sent to jail for having sex with 10 or 12 year olds. I mean, he was sent to jail at one stage for using a crucifix in a sexual act. And blasphemy was considered much more severe a crime in 18th century France than paedophilia.
Well, here's another over-the-top scene from the Marquis de Sade's book, Juliet. The anti-heroine has just set fire to a house. She's burnt to death a mother and seven children, and she's had an orgy in the light of the flames. Afterwards, she reflects on what she's done.
So that's what murder is, then. A little disorganised matter, a few molecules shattered and flung back into the crucible of nature, who within a few days will give them back to the earth in a different form. What is the harm in that? Are a woman and a child more dear to nature than flies or worms? If I take life away from one of them, I give it back to the other. So in what way am I doing wrong?
Yeah, well, Janet Street Porter, what do you think? Did he really believe this?
I think what the book's all about is the fact that life's going to be hard on you no matter what. It's about how one woman has to get on in life and all the things that she has to go through. And the book was really popular at the time. It was published secretly and went into several editions. So he wasn't writing a book that didn't find an immediate audience.
I think Juliet is, in a strange way, an admirable character because she anticipates these dominating women, and he likes to show just how far it can go, I think.
She's like a fantasy feminist figure. She's like Barbarella or something. She's like something from a comic strip. She's not written as a real person. She's written as a larger-than-life comic strip heroine.
Juliet is always interesting. You don't like her, but you watch her.
You're listening to Great Lives on BBC Radio 4. We're talking about the Marquis de Sade with Janet Street Porter and Margaret Crossland. We've mentioned already, Janet, that he suffered for his pleasures. He spent no less than 27 of his 74 years in prison for his misdemeanours. I found it rather surprising, looking at his life, that the authorities in those days cared what a nobleman did get up to in private.
Well, I think the reason why he was imprisoned wasn't so much because he did any one thing, but he had the misfortune to have a mother-in-law who loathed him. So another way of looking at the tragedy in the life of the Marquis de Sade is that he not only married a woman who was long-suffering and, by the way, did collude in a lot of what he got up to.
She took part in some of the debauches, didn't
she? She did. So his wife was hardly shocked by it, in fact, cooperated. And even when she knew that her younger sister, who was some kind of trainee nun, was involved, still turned a blind eye. But her mother, his mother-in-law, was absolutely a social climber and saw that his activities kind of ruined her social standing. So the reason why he spent so much of his time in jail is his mother-in-law didn't want him out.
Well, she was able to use this very strange practice that they had, the lettre de cachet. You just said to the king, please, I don't like my son-in-law. Will you please sign the lettre de cachet? And off he goes into the Bastille.
This is what he felt like about jail life. It's from a long letter of really bitter complaint that he sent to his wife after he found himself locked up in the Bastille.
They claim I must make my bed and sweep out my room. The first I don't mind because they did it very badly, and it amuses me to do it. But as for the second, unfortunately, I cannot manage it at all. My parents must be to blame for not having included that particular skill in my education. The fact is, there were many things they did not foresee. Many things. If they had, there would have been no tavern wench who could have rivaled me. Meanwhile, I beg you to persuade the authorities to give me some lessons. Let the man who looks after me sweep it out but once a week for 4 or 5 years. I shall study him closely. And you will see that afterwards I shall manage as well as he.
Well, he's obviously quite witty and sensible there, but to what extent was it an era when servants and the poor and prostitutes, the people he must have exploited at various times, I mean, they weren't regarded as having much in the way of what would be called human rights, were they?
I'm afraid a lot of that went on. The Comte de Charolais used to think it was great fun if he had workmen standing around on the roof to take potshots at them, and if they fell off, he was batured. The lower classes, unfortunately, were used to it. If they weren't having it from de Sade, they were getting it from lots of other people.
You mentioned, Janet, that he seduced his sister-in-law, who was not merely a virgin but also a nun, but you seem to think that was quite funny when you mentioned it earlier.
Well, I think he was compulsive. I mean, I think he saw attractive women, and he was absolutely compelled. He had this quality. I suppose if we were talking about him these days, we'd say he's like Michael Douglas. He's a sex addict and he should be sent to a clinic. You know, it's so trendy these days to talk about people who are compulsively addicted to things. And if we place him in this kind of 21st century context, we'd have sent him off to the Priory or sent him off to some one of those rehab places to cure himself of his sexual addiction. He was absolutely compulsive. I mean, there's no doubt about that. When you go through his entire life, it was one woman after another, and no woman could present herself to him. And if you know, he just had to conquer them.
Well, there was this friend. She really was a friend, Marie Dorothée de Russey, whom I talk about in my book. It shows that he was capable of being friends with an intelligent woman. They may have had a little affair on the side, but there was nothing at all serious, and she did all she could to help sort out the miseries of the married couple. And I think that's really another good thing in his favour. He could make such a friend.
Now, Janet, you've actually written, Far From Degrading Women, De Sade Liberated Us. You really would put it that strongly, would you?
I think he liberated women by encouraging them to explore their sexuality. All right, he was in charge of how it happened and when it happened.
He was
in charge, but he was the first person that wrote about all the things that women could do sexually and all the ways that they could give him pleasure. Now, yes, you're right, he did use and abuse prostitutes and he did use and abuse the lower classes. But at the same time, he did empower women. We might not be comfortable with how he did it, but he is a really important character for women.
I think we've almost grown up to meet Sade at his own level now.
What do you mean?
Well, as Janet says about educating women and treating women as though they were people. I know he appeared to treat them appallingly, but that was his age. But in his long novel, Aline Valcour, he wrote a whole piece about educating women.
It's interesting that at the same time as De Sade, we have in England Mary Wollstonecraft, who actually journeys to France to see the revolution, as a kind of revolution tourist.
And Wordsworth put a stone from the Bastille in his pocket.
De Sade himself, though, did not enjoy, rather surprisingly, the bloody terror of the revolution, did he? He wasn't one of those who looked at the guillotine executions with relish.
No, he was a pacifist and he didn't agree with the death penalty.
No, he almost was executed himself. He was just lucky he escaped. And I think he must have been full of resentment. That's why he wrote all that stuff. He thought, well, I will now start at A and go on to Z, all these horrors. He really had to express his resentment somehow. And, of course, he missed his sex life, whether it was with them. Somebody from the street or an actress or even his own wife. There are descriptions, I believe, in some of his letters of how he sent his wife to find curious sex aids, which she didn't understand what it was all about, but he tried to explain, and the poor woman went into all the right places trying to get them.
He ordered dildos from prison. He would send his wife detailed descriptions of exactly the right kind of dildo that this woman had to go out and get. And she did. She went along with it and smuggled them into prison for him.
The right size and everything, yeah.
When he was in prison, he had a long affair with an actress before the laundry maid that was at the very end of his life. But his wife must have realised that this was a very, very long-standing relationship with his actress. But his wife did put up with him for his whole life.
She did finally turn against him, didn't she? She did finally divorce him.
I think suddenly in the end it snapped and she just ditched him. Yes.
I think we could do a little bit more from the film Quills now. This is a scene in which he defends his novel Justine against criticism by a representative of the church.
It's not even a proper novel. It's nothing but an encyclopedia of perversions. Frankly, it even fails as an exercise in craft. Characters are wooden, the dialogue is inane, not to mention the endless repetition of words like nipple and pikestaff.
There I was taxed, it's true.
And such puny scope. Nothing but the very worst in man's nature.
I write of the great eternal truths that bind together all mankind, the whole world over. We eat, we shit, we fuck, we kill, and we die.
But we also fall in love. We build cities, we compose symphonies, and we endure. Why not put that in your books as well?
It's a fiction, not a moral treatise.
But isn't that the duty of art? To elevate us above the beast?
I'd have thought that was your duty, Abbé, not mine.
Joaquin Phoenix as the Abbe and Geoffrey Rush as the Marquis de Sade in the film Quills. But Janet Street Porter, I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but I've been dipping into the Sodom book, and really, it is, most of the time, nothing more than pornography.
I wouldn't say it was pornographic at all. I would just say it was a catalogue. It was written as a catalogue of possibilities.
What's the difference between a catalogue and pornography?
It's a subjective thing. I just don't find it pornographic. I don't think the purpose of writing 120 Days of Sodom was to be sexually arousing. It was a catalogue. It's like a piece of poetry.
And expressing all his resentment, all that's boiling up in him. But it's always said, you know, that, well, I'm sure you'll know, that women are not very impressed by pornography. They like the real thing. Nobody could possibly enjoy the 120 Days of Sodom. All I can say is thank goodness he only wrote 40 of them.
Well, don't you think the other thing is, it is like a political pamphlet. Mm. You've got to stop thinking of it as a brilliantly crafted piece of fiction, comparing it to, I don't know, Dickens or whatever. But what I do think he did in his books, the service that he did kind of 20th century figures like Freud, was that by pushing everything to the limit and by laying out on paper everything that's churning through your mind, he kind of sets the scene for psychoanalysis and the way that we then, you know, the 20th century became the me century, where we all started to consider ourselves.
What about this final part of de Sade's life, directing the actors who, like him, were inmates of the asylum at Charenton, which produced a famous play which Peter Brook directed in the 60s?
I think that was a wonderful play. I enjoyed it very much. And I think Posad, when doing this at Charenton, must have been a sort of complete consecration. It must have been wonderful for him.
Janet, a sort of happy ending to the story?
Happy in that he could see his work performed and that he could do something creative, even though he was unfairly by this time, completely unfairly incarcerated. I mean, I do wish that I could have been one of the people that had gone to the mental hospital and seen him. And I, you know, I still wish I could have met him.
I think it would have been marvellous to meet him and could have had most wonderful discussions. If you happened to be a young charlady, it might not have been so easy. But otherwise, one could have had a wonderful time discussing ideas with him.
I don't think I want to meet him at all.
Oh, no, well, listen, I'm sitting here, I'm 55, I would have been safe. Well, I assume so.
Another Great Lives at the same time next week. Many thanks to my guests, Janet Street Porter and Margaret Crossland. And we'll give the last word to the Marquis de Sade himself as he summarises his views, or at least the more printable of them, in A Dialogue Between a Priest and a Dying Man.
Leave your prejudices. Be a man. Be human. Without fear and without hope. Leave your gods and your religions. All that is of no use except to put weapons into men's hands. The name alone of all those horrors has caused more blood to be shed in the world than all other wars and disasters put together. Renounce the idea of another world. There is none. Do not renounce the idea of enjoying and causing happiness in this world.